You're listening to Rosie on the House.
Come on around back, but hold up. Hold up. Hold up. Don't get in Randy's blind spot. He don't want to run you over anymore. You want to be run over. Get some sand and dirt dropped off today for the horse arena. We've been waiting for this rain. I can't tell you, Jay, for how long. So the next big rain, we're finally going to... Our horse stalls, they have been standing in the same spot for about 5 years. So when it rains, you know, it's just sitting water. Yeah. And, you know, you got it turns to black water because of the river. Yeah. So we've been waiting for this rain. Oh, it is so nice to finally be getting something done because it's been a long time.
Well, depending on where you live, you know, I mean, some places in town have gotten shellacked. Other places, you know, typical monsoon. It's spotty all over. There was a pretty good shower going on. Looked like about Levine this morning when I was coming in. So pretty good little thunder boomers this morning about 4:30, quarter to 5, I guess, something like that going on somewhere. So
the shade of green, everything starts to turn almost instantly.
Doesn't take long. You go down southern Arizona from about Picacho Peak down and then south of Tucson around Sonoyta and Elgin. It's really getting green down there. They've had lots of rain.
So what do we do with it all? I mean, everything just seems so relieved in the plants, trees, lawns. Do you just leave it alone? Do you fertilize now? Is it a good time to pre-emerge?
All of that. I mean, you know, definitely a good time to get some fertilizer down, especially on warm season grasses and turf grasses and things like that, and let Mother Nature do its thing and water it in, hopefully. You know, we're kind of on that in-between time about feeding trees and shrubs and citrus, but, you know, the citrus will, with this humidity, will start pushing lots of new growth. It wouldn't be a bad time to get some good slow-release organic fertilizer on any of that stuff, not push it real hard, but kind of give it some good slow release nutrition. You know, and pre-emergent, you know, it's always a good time to apply pre-emergent, you know, in your gravel areas. I would be a little careful this late now applying pre-emergent to a lawn that you might want to overseed this fall with winter ryegrass. But your gravel areas, granite areas, if you missed, you know, March, April, get it on there because it doesn't take long. Like I say, you know, when it's 90 to 110 degrees and you get moisture on the ground, stuff grows really fast. So all of your gravelly areas that you don't want any weeds or anything to come up, pre-emergent starts working pretty much the minute it gets watered into the soil and lasts for, you know, 3 or 4 months, depending on your rate of application. So good time to do that. Great time to fertilize. You know, still, a little bit of vegetable gardening going on, not much, but we're in that transition time where it won't be long. You know, we're over halfway through July. Come August, we start thinking about things like beans and corn and, you know, getting ground ready because September is all of our leafy greens we start, all the farmers and Yuma and different places are starting to prep for all those early. You know, they do it a little earlier than we do, but getting ready for fall planting. So it doesn't feel much like it out there, but it's right around the corner.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. If you'd like to talk to Mr. John J. Harper of the Farm's Choice, all natural product for organic fertilizing and fourth generation gardener, master gardener.
Technically not. I mean, not a master. Master gardener is somebody that's gone through
the
cooperative extension classes, which I haven't done. But certainly practical experience from being in the nursery business for 40 some years. So yeah, I think I'm qualified. Maybe somebody will stump me though. They watch.
it's always the. When you say, well, you know, avocados don't do well here, and you get somebody, well, I've got an avocado tree that...
I learned a long time ago not to ever tell somebody you couldn't grow something here because somebody will have done it. There are tropical fruits being grown here, avocados, mangoes, papayas, different things, and can be done if you have the right circumstances. But the other thing I tell people—
And time.
Yeah, and time. Yeah. So, you know, if gardening is truly a hobby and a passion for you, then you should try that stuff. I mean, you should try growing some of that stuff. You can get it to work if you've got the right spot. But the other thing I tell folks is if you don't and you're not into that, don't do it, because if they did really well here, there'd be avocado trees in every yard. I mean, who wouldn't have one?
I'd have six.
So, yeah. So, you know, a good indication of what does very well here is just to drive around and look around and see what you see lots of. And those are kind of the surefire deals. But you can certainly grow a lot of interesting and cool stuff here if you've got the right microclimate, the right setup, you know, flood irrigation particularly. And if you're in an area that's maybe not quite as cold, then that would be a great place to try it. And there's a number of pretty good nurseries that specialize in those rare and tropical fruits going on now. So, you know, if you want to monkey around with it, you know, it's not like it's the most expensive thing in the world to go try and have fail. It's not like golf. I mean, you can spend thousands of dollars on equipment and go out there and fail miserably at it, right? You know, you can buy a lot of cool plants for a couple hundred bucks, and, you know, if half of them don't work, you're not really out that much, so.
And the big guys see the opportunity in it, too. Dave Wilson's nursery, a big propagator and grower, has been trying to get something that avocado wise that would do better in the desert because of the number of requests. They see the money potential they can make.
Well, that and that's where our future growth in our agricultural production areas are, in the warmer areas of the United States. So all of our horticulture and agriculture, not all of it, but a great deal of our research is going into trying to develop varieties of all kinds of things that will do better in warmer, drier climates, thrive with less water, those types of things. So that's, you know, that's a great conservation tool for water. If we're going to expand agriculture into areas that don't have a lot of water, we need to have varieties that will do well with less water. So there's been a lot of things done, and I know they are working on a heat-tolerant avocado, and they'll probably come up with something.
Did you, or for anyone that wasn't with us in the 7 o'clock hour, Rosie had an article, I don't know the columnist, but he was proposing sucking water out of the Snake River to fill meat up.
Okay. Well, we we pipe oil and natural gas.
That's what he was saying.
A heck of a lot longer distances than we would have to pipe water from certain places to recharge some of our reservoirs and lakes out of places that have sometimes too much. I mean, look at how many times the Mississippi River floods its banks. Man, if we could figure out a way to pump that water over here, that'd be something.
Yeah, but you know what they say about the Mississippi River.
Well, no, you tell me.
By the time it hits New Orleans, it's cycled through a person or a cow 18 times.
18?
18. That's why they don't drink much water in New Orleans.
I got news for you. That's a water source for you.
Well, we could make it 19. Ship it over here to Lake Powell or the CAP, and we'll... you know, or the Gila, better yet. Dump it into the Gila and let it fill poor old San Carlos up.
Well, this guest columnist was talking about an 8-foot pipeline from the Snake River to Lake Mead. Now, I've heard about a pipeline they have proposed from Puerto Peñasco. That's 170 miles. Snake River's 900 miles. I'd still rather the Snake River water, I think.
Yeah, what kind of water would we get from Puerto Peñasco?
Salty.
Salt water. Yeah. I guess desalinization is pretty expensive and takes a lot of electricity too. That's the flip side of that. So that might not be the best plan. I heard there was a guy one time proposing we tow icebergs to play
Well, so, they're breaking off at a rate like crazy because of global warming. So
where do we tow? Do we airlift it to Lake Pleasant or drop it in Lake Mead? What do we do?
Maybe you tow it off the coast and suck it into the. I don't know. Yeah.
You need old
crazier
world.
Things have been done.
Yes, yeah, probably.
You know, drilling holes through mountains to run a railroad through it and all those kind of things. You know, it's certainly not out of the question.
You need one of those old world skills where they used to carve the ice and carry it by, you know, horse-drawn carts and sell it in the cities. Like, how did they keep that from not melting in a time when electricity wasn't even...
My dad talks about the ice wagon going down the street, and you know that had been in the 40s, you know, late 30s, early 40s in Phoenix. That the, you know, people got ice delivered to their ice boxes, and the guy chip off a big chunk and take it to the house and drop it off in their ice box for them. The kids would kind of go behind because when he's chipping it, there's
you get
pieces
a little shavings.
Of it fall off, and probably in the summer that was pretty good stuff, you know.
We're in the outdoor living hour, believe it or not. We've kind of gone on a few little bunny trails around, but it's all around the water, which is pretty critical in our outdoor living spaces. If you've got a question about your lawns, your trees, your gardens, 1-888-767-4348. You can text questions to 411-923 or email to info@rosieonthehouse.com. If you need a little help with plant or insect identification, you can send an image to us that way.